The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deake speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and joining me is guest Charlie Gareth Reynolds. How are you, Gareth?
Good, Will. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Enjoy doing a podcast with an American because with the time difference, it's 11 a.m. where I am to make it sort of a good time for where you are, wherever that may be in the world. And, you know, who knows? I don't know where you are. You would not reveal it to me.
I don't want you. Yeah, exactly. I mean, don't worry about it. I'm in a basement. Don't worry about it.
Whatever. Whatever, man.
Yeah,
it seems like you're there of your own free will, wherever
it's
the
not.
Fuck it is.
It's not.
You just told me it was 11 o'clock in the morning where I was. That's all I needed to know, and I didn't need to know anything about you
or
what was going on with you.
Yeah. I'm also in Australia. I should point that out.
You're in like another room in my house. This podcast is coming from within the house.
I thought you were going to say it's nice to talk to an American because you feel better about your country. Which I would imagine is also the other side.
That's, I mean, it's absolutely 100% the case, you know, that...
Yeah. Oh, it's got to be great.
It helps.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I can't imagine being able to, like, look at it and be like, fuck, rather than be in it and be like, fuck.
I mean, it is nice to be back, it turns out. It turns out that America picked a very good time to have a complete and utter breakdown because it was really... They'd been edging up towards it a fair bit while I had been there. And then as soon as I kind of left, I feel like, and I don't want to make this all about me, but I may have been the only thing holding it all together.
A lot of people think you were the linchpin. A lot of people think when you left, there was a vacuum and pure evil siphoned itself into the said hole. And that's what you have now. I mean, I'm sure I'm not the first guy to blame you for Trump. I can't be.
I'm not to blame for Trump, although I will say this. Yeah, I did quite famously, and when I say quite famously, I mean famously in my own life, not famously in any other way.
Sure,
famously. The thing that everybody's talking about. I did fly into America on that fateful day in 2016. I left Australia and Hillary was in front and she was going to win. The timing of the flight was thus that there'd been enough early polls, exit polls, these sort of things. Everything was going to plan. Hillary was going to get the majority of the votes, which she kind of did anyway. But it turns out that wasn't all the details that you needed to do to get across the line.
No. But that's the popular vote. That's what American Idol does, not our democracy.
So that was going fine when I got on the plane. And somewhere
long
about...
Long flight.
It's a long flight.
Long flight.
A lot can change, it turns out, in one flight. And so somewhere during that flight... It went from being the case that when we all got on, like a plane full of people got on a plane going to America, assuming that Hillary was going to be the new president, and got off in a reality that no one had really imagined. Like, there is still a part of me that thinks that I've gone through some sort of alternate dimension time loop in that moment, because everything since then has seemed real fucked up.
Yeah, it's just like a Bermuda Triangle plane. You're like in your own version of Lost, which I've never seen, but it sounds that it makes enough sense that it could be Lost. Yeah, no, and that's really what it has felt like since. I mean, the comparison has been made, and it's just too good that, like, it is the Back to the Future where Biff is in charge. It's Back to the Future 2 when they go off the timeline into the Biff casino land.
And that is kind of what it feels like now.
The country.
That's what the world is now, you know, because, I mean, I did see somebody the other day saying that, coronavirus, masks were a conspiracy, and coronavirus was a conspiracy to take down America. And I was like, yeah, but it is... If it's just a conspiracy to take down America, it's really happened in a whole bunch of other places that it didn't need to happen to take down America.
That would be like, that's like if someone dies and your plan was to shoot them in the ankle. It's like, we should have, like, this was so survivable. Like, it would be like, you just want to, like, hurt the person, like, you just want them out of the Olympics. So you just, like, shoot them in the ankle, but then they hold their ankle, and then they just fall into the street, get hit by a car, which takes them over to a pool where an electrical pole falls in. And you're like, I just wanted to hurt the foot.
Well, it's a bit like you want to murder one person, but you just kill 300 just to throw people off the scent. You're like, no one's going to notice my link to that one in the middle if I just kill an extra 299 people.
And that is very true and what it is like, because it is just like... There's too much to process. It's flying. It is fast and furious. And the reaction is still so apathetic. It's unreal. It's like it is astounding as usual that we are, you know, still I mean, people are still going out for jogs, and you know, it's strange how we'll operate. Like, it's like, you know, you watch Mad Max and you're like, oh my, how do they stand for this? You're like, well, you're just like, come on, maybe I get water. Maybe not. Either way.
I can stay at home and, like, you know, play guitar in my bedroom, or I can get strapped to the front of a futuristic car and play guitar there.
We need more of that guy.
That's the guy doing. That's the guy who's going on the road doing gigs, even though coronavirus is still around.
He's in Fort Lauderdale all week.
I'm just going to perform. Strap me to the front of a futuristic car.
This next song's called "Fuck Masks." Yeah, completely. That guy, 100% is not only at a Trump rally, but he's like in camera shot of Trump, where you're like, oh, look at that guy. There he is. He's just like behind him, like,
How much are you staying inside your house? How much do you, like, what's your life like at the moment? Like, you know, just in a general sort of, what do you do with your day?
It's just a lot inside. I mean, especially with the smoke and stuff, like, it's, you kind of have no choice. I mean, you have to be inside for the most part. You can go and do some stuff, but, my life is very simple. I still, you know, have work and stuff to do. So, like, I still am, like, busy, but you know, not really. I was in a writer's room for like 2 months, and so that was like a 9-to-5 job, and so that's like, that felt like a thing, you know, still weird. But then outside of that, now I really don't know, man. It's fucking weird. It is
now. Can I ask you a question? Like, I'm sure you've been asked this question a lot, but I need to kind of cover it off, because even Amy asked this question, and if Amy's asking it, then everybody's got to have been asking it, I think, in relation to this question, which is, you wrote on a TV show called a cartoon that is currently showing in Australia on Netflix. I guess, is it on Netflix all over the world? Is that called Hoops?
Hoops.
And you wrote an episode of that, right?
I wrote a couple episodes of that, but yeah.
I've only watched a couple so far, but it's a pretty funny show. Like, it's been making me laugh. Were you aware at the time that the lead character of that show was going to look like Dave Anthony?
That is a great question. You know, it's funny because they had made... there was a little like 10-minute version of it that they had made, and it was Jake and then Ben, the creator of it, and they just made this little thing, and I watched it and then read the script, and then I was like, what? It wasn't until like they started putting pictures up that were like in a production office that were like Hoops, you know, and like, so an actual, that I was like, and I even said to Jake, like, this, I mean, that looks exactly like Dave. And he was like, that looks 100% like him. And then the thing with these with an animated show is it takes so long. Like, I finished working on this so long ago, so I completely forgot about it. And then it was just like once I posted like the like little teaser of it, I mean, it was just everyone was like, Did you base this on Dave? Is this an homage to Dave? You know, like, I wasn't involved in any of that. They just happened to make the main character just look very much... The guy that Jake Johnson plays, the main character, Coach, he looks exactly like Dave.
Is there a chance that you have been hired on this show through some sort of subliminal thing where they're just like, we've got an angry guy who looks like Dave Anthony, and then suddenly
angry
just...
too.
He's like, he's...
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
No, he's not just, doesn't just look like Dave. Like, this character is more Dave,
Dave
than
coaching.
Dave is. This is literally if Dave was a coach of a basketball team. If instead of thinking the NBA was rigged, he became a coach of a basketball team. This
right,
is the Dave Anthony story.
Right, yeah. Which would, I mean, which would totally be a thing Coach would think anyway. Yeah, no, there might be some cosmic connection, potentially, you know, that they somehow subliminally Dave got me the job, but no, it is so funny. It was so funny. I was wondering where you're going with that. I was like, you know, yeah. But then and I didn't tell Dave, and then it just kind of dropped. And then he was like, why are people? I was like, yeah, there's a resemblance, you know, minor.
Yeah, in that he looks exactly like you, and he's real angry about everything like you.
If a wizard were to turn you into a cartoon, this is what it would be. On every level.
Just to complete the ultimate Dave Anthony story of it, you did not get cast as that character.
Yeah,
they've decided you are perfect to be a lead in a TV show, but you did not get the part.
Well, that happened to Evan, my writing partner, who I worked on Hoops. He... You know, when you first move to LA, like, the thing you do is you know, commercial act. Like, that's the way that you can actually supplement a real income. And so, you know, you get involved in, like, commercial acting and stuff like that. And Evan had done this Dr. Pepper commercial that was huge. It was to the Meatloaf song, I Would Do Anything for Love. And it was like, I went out with him when it, like, he would get recognized all the time and stuff like that. And then, so, like, 2 years later, like, someone sends him a picture. They're at an audition. And... it's like, you know, they want the Dr. Pepper guy from that commercial. And he never got called in. He was like, what the fuck? Like, literally, I'm here. I'll do it. You know? But there's like, I don't know. It's in the... So,
I mean,
maybe it's one of those deals.
The fact that he didn't... I mean, it would have been worse if he had got called for it but didn't get it.
Maybe. Yeah, you know, well, it would be... Here's the pathetic version is where you fight to get called in because it's you. And then you just fuck it up. Yeah. Exactly.
Or just
which is
that
how it would work.
Classic casting scenario where, because I'm not an actor, I've done two acting jobs in my entire life. I've acted twice.
Let's put a pin in that, and let's get into that after, because I am very curious about that.
Okay, but when I first went to LA, because the way the system works over there and everyone's so fascinated by acting, I got sent out to do some auditions, some terrible auditions. Like,
and
most
had you had... any, like, because it is, auditioning is a very, it's different than maybe what people would imagine. Like, it is weird and there is an art to it. Do you have any experience, or are you just going in like cold, not knowing anything?
Cold, not knowing anything. Had never Perfect. Been to an audition right. for anything in my entire life, and I'm suddenly Perfect. Landed into, and going out for, because I had like a big agent, and like I came in, you know, like from another country. And at the time, I'll tell you exactly what it was. I was getting... all the things that Russell Brand had suddenly become too big to go out for.
Oh, what a dream.
Right. So
that's
basically
great.
They were
that's
like,
a great area.
What we'd like is like another foreigner. It went well with this foreigner. Let's see if we can get another foreigner.
How about, is there another tall, charming man with an accent that you have nearby?
So
what's his hair like? That'll do.
That was their thinking. Their thinking was basically, you'll be able to do these things, which of course I was completely incapable of doing any of those things. But I auditioned for a whole bunch of like things that ended up being made into movies. My favorite of which being the one that they were really like, no, I think you'll be really good for this, which was a show called Your Highness. Your Highness, like a stoner,
Danny McBride movie.
McBride medieval comedy movie.
It's terrible.
Absolutely fucking terrible. But
yeah,
that's the one that I could have been in. Oh, and Baywatch the movie. I think that was one that I was probably pretty close for as well.
Oh my! What were you? What would you have been in Baywatch?
I don't know. There was some sort of Australian like lifeguardy situation in Baywatch. I don't know. I can't even remember. But
that's the best. But those are the best.
But the thing that you don't realize is, like, because I've never been in this scenario before, is that they have an idea in their head mostly about what this character will be. And so you suddenly find yourself just rocking up to some studio, like driving onto some sort of, you know, studio that you've only seen at the opening, you know, titles of, you know, all these like movies. Like
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yeah.
And then you just come in and you go into this room and you sit in a room with essentially eight other guys who either look like better or worse versions of you. Like it's a real insight into what, not what you could be if you really looked after yourself, what you could be if you let yourself go a little bit. And they all sit around in a room together. Like
it's like being in Multiplicity.
Yeah, right? And there's a few just going, oh, you were like the eighth copy. Things were going a bit wrong.
There's some duds where you're like, this guy signed in on the wrong sheet. I don't know if this guy should even be here.
Well, that's what it would be like if you were if Evan's going out so we want a Dr. Pepper guy, he would suddenly be sitting in a room surrounded by a whole bunch of people who looked like him, but he would be the original him. And then suddenly, can you imagine the other guys who've like, they need the Dr. Pepper type, and then you suddenly find yourself in the room with Dr. Pepper himself.
That's like Billboard, though. You know what I mean? You're like, all right, I'm going up against the GOAT. I got this.
If you want to be the Dr. Pepper guy, you've got to beat the Dr. Pepper guy.
I know it goes through his home court. I'm going for it.
It's like Highlander.
Yeah,
there can be only one Dr. Pepper guy.
Yeah, right. And he cuts his head off. What did you do, Trevor? But the rules. Well, also, there's always like there are ones where, you know, I mean, because if you really are going out for commercials, like, you know, you'd go out 3, 4, 5 times a week. I mean, it was a huge pain in the ass, but you would see some of the things you were going in for, and it would just be like a sloppier, fatter Seth Rogen type, you know, gives less, and you'd be there and you'd be like, this is like hard to read. Like, I've been running. Why am I? This is tough. This is really. I need new headshots because I should not be going in for it, you know? or ones like. And then the way they treat you, like, as a product. Like, I mean, I ended up doing a lot of commercials, and, like, there was. That, you know, there would be ones where they would just, like, they'd put you in wardrobe and they would just look, they'd just be like, you know, his love handles are too big there. Like, we need. And you're just like, Jesus, lady. Like, can you go into another room and do this? And then I had one where the director saw my full beard and he was like, what's wrong with his beard? Because I have like two patches in my beard where no hair grows, and like he's on a walkie-talkie. He's like, what's wrong with his beard? And she's like, what's wrong with your beard? And I'm like, well, that's a very insult. I don't know. She goes, it's just the way it is. And he goes, it's bald like that? And she's like, it just is like that. I was like, yeah, it's like that. This is really insulting.
Hang on, just run me through, where is the director in this scenario on a walkie-talkie?
He's in the second, he's they're shooting these, it was for like like some cable or something like that, some cable commercial. So they're shooting like 12 of these in like 3 days. So this dude's on the second floor of this house, like in the middle of shooting one, trying to approve. Like, they were all out of their mind. I was like, what the fuck is going on? That's when you knew the economy was going bad. I was like, this is abnormal. Like, what is happening here? They're shooting, you know, 12? This is nuts. And yeah, so he's just up there. And then what they ended up doing was they ended up shaving part of my beard and then gluing the beard that they'd shaved into the beard spots, the bald beard spots that I have. So it was normal. Normal stuff.
How did you feel you looked with, like, has, because when you see yourself with a different version of your beard, a beard that a dude on a walkie-talkie approves of, right? Some godlike figure in another room with a walkie-talkie approving the way that people look. You know, this is how I like to imagine God got it done in the early days. Like, when it's Adam and Eve, you can take your time. They're artisanal projects, right?
Yeah.
But once you like get up speed and you have to be creating humans willy-nilly, like, you've got to be... You're going to be farming that out to angels. There's going to be some angel with a walkie-talkie in a giant room in heaven just
Why didn't you finish his beard, Gabriel?
Just shave some of the other beard off and stick it back on. That'll do. Close enough.
That'll do. We got to keep moving. There's a log jam here. Keep them going. Yeah.
So you've seen yourself with a better version or a publicly approved better version of what you could be. What did it make you like long for being able to grow that sort of beard?
It was dangerous. Yeah, it's dangerous. It's dangerous to do that because that's how you get. You know, that's how you get. That's how you go. Oh shit! Yeah, it is weird. And then I looked at it. I was like, this is a good looking beard. But until then, that's how I always am. I never really know. Like someone always has to point out something that's wrong with me, and then I'm like, yeah, my teeth aren't right, are they? like some people point out stuff, but that one definitely. When I saw the full version, I was like, yeah, this is. I'm like the brawny man. I got a good look. I'm like a rugged. You know, now I just look like a teenager. It's like, do you need ketchup or are you good?
You do have a look like a teenager that's trying to sneak into something.
Like, that's the vibe I like to give off, 100%.
Or like a 21 Jump Street style cop who's trying to...
That's my dream at my age now, to try to pull off high school. Hey, what's up, dudes? You know, that's my dream. Make that movie with me. Make 41 Jump Street.
Okay, give me an audition on the spot.
Okay.
Like what we're casting is we're casting a sequel to 21 Jump Street. We did 22 Jump Street. Now we're jumping 20 years.
By the way, I loved both of the Jump Streets.
What you were jumping ahead in the future. We're going to 44 Jump Street is what we're starting.
Okay.
That's the reboot. All 44 right. Jump Street.
Okay. What's the angle?
And well, we need you, a man who's how old are you in real life?
I'd rather lie about my age, somewhere
between 28 and 40. So
absolutely, yeah, right on there. So I still fit on that. Yep.
We need you to play a cop who's somewhere between 28 and 40, who needs to go back into a high school, but it's a modern day high school. It's the year 2021. COVID is over. People are back at high schools. There's some shit going down at a high school, and we need like a cop to go back into high school. It's your first day at the new high school. This is the scene that we need you to audition with. First day as an undercover cop in the high school, trying to meet people and make friends.
That's great. Okay, that's great. And let me just say again, I loved the others. So this is a great. This I think I support this as a fan and as someone who would love to be involved in it. But Gareth Reynolds, part of Main Cop. Thank you so much again. Big fan. Hands, and I will shave. And this, my beard is like this. Oh my God, lasagna again? How over this are you guys? Me, major. I'll tell you guys. Is it just me or has lately stuff been kind of funky at the school, like effed up and stuff? Hold on, let me turn my hat backwards real quick. Pass that salt. I don't care about sodium levels. Yeah. You guys noticed anything? Any strange activities of any kind? Oh, man. Milk with a meal? That makes sense. That's something I'm used to doing for a long time, and it's not strange.
All right. Great read. We love what you did there. Absolutely fantastic. Now, there is a bit of range to this character. So we love what you've done.
Thank you.
What we will say is sometimes we'll just give people a thank you and a pass at this stage. We haven't given
you... Well, let me just affirm again that I'm a fan first, excited to even be told that I'm advancing. And I'm not going to read into that too much, but that's fantastic. I think feels mutual, but I don't want to blow it. So go ahead. Sorry.
We got another couple of scenes.
Okay.
You can read into it whatever you want if we move you on after we only do one of those scenes.
That was your phone, to be clear to the people watching the tape. I would never, on set, mine's off, but it's totally cool with me that yours is on. I'm not
sorry. I am actually currently approving three other auditions at the same time.
Great.
The economy's not great. Anyway.
No, I understand.
The beard's going to go, so that's not the problem that the people in casting said it was going to be, so we're fine with that. We will need to give you an artificial beard for the earlier scenes when you're still a cop with a beard, but I'm sure you're fine with that. You're fine with wearing wearing beard face. I mean, some people 100%. Have an issue with it, particularly after the whole Batman versus Superman Justice League, you know, mustache debacle. There is
No, I completely understand. I want the beard that is best for the project.
We will be doing it all in natural effects. It will be you'll have to get the beard put on for the scenes. We don't have the visual effects budget to put it in later. So
I would love that. I would love that. I'm so in that I'll wear it forever. I mean, whatever you guys want, literally. So I will literally do anything. I am a fan on every level.
I don't want to skip ahead too far, but there would be a clause in the contract about contractually having to wear the beard for a period of probably 18 months to 2 years as a promotional aspect post a period. You've seen the contract. Okay, great.
Of course, yeah. No, I've signed a number of beards. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I know that clause.
Well, you have done a lot of beard pieces, and you know they have some of the best fake beard work in the industry. But again, we're getting bogged down, and we've got a busy day, and I'm approving a few things. So we do have now this is a scene that I think you'll be able to handle, but I'm just going to throw you a few lines.
Okay.
So I am
play.
I'm your boss. Your police boss, the person who's put you on this assignment.
Like a chief of police, right, or sergeant. Okay, right.
Well, okay, just hang on. I'm just going to approve that.
Mine is off.
Yep. No, great. That's all good. Okay,
and you are allowed to do that. I'm not going to be the guy who's like, what? I'm fine with it.
Okay, fantastic. Good. So I will be the chief of police, and you will be reporting back after your first day at the school.
Okay, all right, great. So, oh, man. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, so what I was going to say, Nathaniel, the reason I've... brought you in here is obviously wanted an update on what the first day at school was. Can you run me through anything that you found particularly challenging? Did anybody suspect that you might not be a high schooler? And of course, most importantly, are there any other leads on the case at the moment?
I'll be 100% honest, Chief. I love what I'm doing. I mean, I really am starting to find it. But we hit a few snags today, you know, ones that I think I can totally overcome with a little bit of time. It seems like some of the lingo we've been testing is not right. Kids, you know, they don't talk as much.
Can you give me an example of something? I mean, we really got the finest linguists in the world together to put together an approved dictionary of terms that kids today were using. Which ones do you not think landed?
I just think the whole, gnarly. Gnarly seems way off.
Gnarly?
I mean, yeah, gnarly. I was saying, so what I did was I rode my skateboard into school and I said, gnarly bricks. And then I did the like, woo sign, you know, like the thumb and the pinky up. Woo. So I go, gnarly bricks. And, that should be celebrated. I mean, that's a hero coming, new kid in school coming in like that. When I was a kid in high school, that dude.
And how was it received?
There was Snickers, not the candy. People were laughing. They were. I would have taken the chocolate, but they found it to be strange. So anyway, it felt like I started off at a bit of a deficit. Got it together. Mm-hmm. You know, in class you can't talk too much. But I certainly made a bunch of fart noises with my armpits, which, again, when I was in high school, that murdered. They were pretty interested in concentrating or didn't find the fart noise funny. I'm still trying to kind of work on what the problem there was. But lunch was tough. Lunch, I really started pushing saying dudes a lot. I thought I'd just say cool dudes, and I was really, really, I think, laid it on way too thick. A number of the children did suggest that I was not their age and that I might be older. I played it off as well as I could. I laughed.
Now, did you go with our pre-approved cover story for when you were asked why you might have looked older than the other kids?
Yes, I said I moved a lot and I've been really stressed out lately. And, you know, they were like, it's more than stress. And they would laugh. I said, I smoke. And still, they said they, you know, genuinely saw crow's feet. The good thing is it's a big school. So I was able to mingle with a number of different other cliques. I will say I was having trouble finding my footing. Again, it seems like the cliques maybe talked in between each other, betwixt each other, because the accusation, again, that I might not be in high school came a lot. But I think it's one of those things where they just need to get used to me being a little older, looking a little older. I think smoking more will help. And I think just gnarly is a word to stay away from.
Okay, well, let's take gnarly out. Let's lay back a little on dudes. Like, I mean, we did have some research around, you know, the next generation being less gender binary and identifying perhaps. And dudes may just come with some sort of, we may not have really taken into account the research we had in that area versus the lingo of the day. So I think at the moment, let's steer clear of dudes. Let's steer clear of gnarly. Did you mention your TikTok? We put a lot of time into, you know, creating that TikTok for you. How was the TikTok with the kids?
Well, I will level with you, Chief. what you guys did to the TikTok is fantastic. Fantastic, if I may. But unfortunately, for the first hour, maybe nerves, maybe I don't know what it was. I was calling it Talk Tick. And I just think that got it off on the wrong foot. People seemed disinterested then in my TikTok, right? Yes, TikTok. People seemed disinterested in my TikTok. But again, I think that's just first day stuff. You know, kids forget stuff.
Have you got any nicknames after your first day? Kids tend to a point, it is a sign. We've obviously, if you can get a nickname on the first day, that's something that's really good.
They were all, one of the children, co-schoolers, put a sign on me that said Gramps, and the name stuck like the sign, which he used duct tape on to firm the metaphor up. So yeah, that's tough.
Any leads on our case? Obviously, that's what we're really here and what's important. Was there any idea, you know, from any of the children, like of unusual things that were happening? Perhaps, you know, other cliques that you should be investigating. Any leads?
Well, I thought I'd made a friend, and I said to him, "The only thing that would make this school cooler, dude." is some more drug activity. He looked at me, but the way he looked at me, I thought he agreed with me. And so we started chewing the fat, and he tells me the distributor is on the fifth floor. So I skip my next period and go up the stairs, like a pregnant teenager, and I go up the stairs, and the fourth floor is the last floor. So when I hit the fifth floor door, it's the emergency exit that leaves you out on the roof. So the distributor was not out there. It did seem too quick to break through the case like that, honestly. But I was locked out on the roof for the greater part of the afternoon, which is a shame, too, because I definitely think I could have made some headway.
Well, Gareth, we love it. We love it. We love what you've done there. Really fantastic. You really understand.
Again, I'm happy to just talk to you guys. That's plenty for me. Everything else is gravy, which I love.
I particularly love the way that just when my phone beeped, I had something else to approve. You just kept going. You didn't acknowledge it. You rolled through it. You were in the moment. It was very
impressive. Phones beep in life. That's the deal with phones.
Now, this is the trickiest of all the scenes. And this is, you know, really where we're going to decide this role today. I've got to be honest with you. And there's a romance. Well, here's the problem. One of the girls from the high school, a senior, but still, you know, a high school girl, develops...
Can I get the age? Just to influence how I play this?
17 years old. 17 years old. Soon to be 18, but not 18 yet.
How soon? By the end of the time of my undercover
work? Your questions are making us feel uncomfortable. The idea of the scene...
Okay,
sure.
That's fine.
The idea of the scene is... that you, of course, as an adult, in no way want to engage in this romantic scenario. So you are doing your best. She is your best lead to get to solve this case. So you don't want to completely. You need to ingratiate yourself with her still, but at the same time, you need to rebuff her advances. So. Tough scene, tough to play it properly. Okay. You know, obviously this is a real decider for us whether someone can handle the emotional range of this character. So we're going to start quite gently. I will be reading you the lines of the girl. On 3, 2, 1. So, Nathaniel, the reason that I've brought you here into my bedroom wasn't really for you to help me tutor me in my mathematics. It's because, Nathaniel.
What?
I love you. The only maths I want to get involved in today is 1 + 1 = 2. The two of us. And I've got another number that I really am excited about. It's between 68 and 70. Nathaniel, how do you feel about this?
Stephanie, that number is 69. I'm aware of what that number means. Look, I came over here just to help you with your math homework and maybe loosely talk about some of the drug culture that seems to have permeated the high school. Anything outside of that seems like it's a little inappropriate. I mean, sure, we're both kids, but to me, any sexual activity before 18 is wrong. I'm not going to be a weird guy who stands here and asks you for your birth date. That makes people feel uncomfortable, so I'm not going to do that. What I am going to say is that that's math I don't want to do. Now, look, maybe you have some drugs we can take, loosen up, or maybe you know how to get some drugs we could take. Or maybe you could send me in the direction of drugs, and I'm not going to the goddamn roof again. I'm not an idiot.
The only drug that I'm interested in, Nathaniel, is the love drug.
I know it seems like we should, but we shouldn't. Trust me. Believe me, it just wouldn't work. I'm not for you.
Nathaniel.
I'm...
Nat, if you let me kiss you, I will tell you who is distributing drugs at the school.
Well, that's really, that feels really difficult and like an unfair angle. But here's what I'll say. I can't kiss you because I have a disease that makes some of the kids think I'm older than I am. And it starts from a bacterial infection in my teeth. And so I can't kiss you. As much as I want to, and I want to give in, believe me, a 69 for you, that would it would be bad. It would be like a 91. I can transmit it. Look, I don't want to get into the mouth problems, but sleep on it and think if you want to give me the distributor's information. If not, I'm always down to help you with math. See ya. Sorry, I forgot my keys.
Very good. Very good. Just incredible.
Wow, that was... Wow. That, for me, even was... What the hell happened? Yeah, that was good.
You went there.
This is a good... This is... I mean, again, I'm just a fan. So I'm just happy to be here.
We love what you've done here today. Look, we can't give you a yes in the room, but...
I wouldn't expect that.
And we're going to see some other Gareth Reynolds types, but... You know the guy from the Dr. Pepper ad too, right?
Yeah, yes, I will say, big drinker. Yeah. So probably not someone you want on set. Everyone else, good luck. You know, I will say there's a lot of bad eggs out there, but good luck with all that. Thank you guys so much. And again, I'm willing to shave anything, all of it. I have shaved all of it. I shouldn't have said that. Stop recording. Thank you guys. Will, you just provided the fulfillment of my fantasy. That's enough. That'll do. That's plenty.
I once went to an audition. Maybe it was. I can't even remember if it was. The guy who directed, he made this great documentary called King of Kong or something like that.
Oh, King of Kong's a great documentary. Yeah, yeah, King of Kong.
And
yeah.
I went out for a movie that he was directing. I can't remember if it was Your Highness, whether he was the dude who actually directed Your Highness whether this is a different story. But I remember that my phone going off during this reminded me of it. The fact that he did not once look up for his phone for the entire time that I was auditioning. There was other people in the room, but he was the director. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is cool. I really like that documentary. And then the entire time he was just looking down at his phone. And this is how fickle I am. In the 5 minutes it took me to audition and leave that, I went from loving that documentary to fuck him and his stupid fucking documentary.
Yeah. By the way, it's not that good. I know I called it great. I do not mean that. Piece of shit. No, it is unbelievable the assholery you'll see come from people who have power. It's insane, you know? And that's one of the things that I do love about how Hollywood is so liberal and all this shit. And it's just as full of, it's entertainment politics. It's full of pricks. It's just full of pricks. And it's full of political lunatics as well, you know? But people are just like, people out there are just like, oh yeah, we're saving the world. It's like any business. I mean, it is, of all the businesses, that one favors the 1%, you know, like Wall Street, like, you know, like what we complain about with banks and shit, that entertainment business. But anyway, again, give me a call if you guys want me to read again. I would love to come in. I didn't mean to go off on that. I wouldn't do that on set. So
that
wait,
was that
what,
great.
What
I mean, Ricky Gervais, you know, who I have mixed feelings about. I think he's made some genius stuff, and then some of his other shtick I find a little infuriating. But
yeah.
But you know what? He does some really great stuff. Like, you know, and one of his great jokes was that he did at the Golden Globes. And again, I find some of his Golden Globe stuff a bit too, look at me, I'm outrageous. But then occasionally he just nails something. And his stuff around the Epstein stuff and his stuff around people working for getting up on stage and making these speeches and then just working for Amazon and Netflix and all these companies that are, you know, Apple. And it's just like, yes, exactly. Like, it is a completely immoral industry. Now, I don't necessarily blame the people within it, because sometimes if you want to like be an actor and the system's terrible, you just have to like work in this terrible system. But it is a terrible system. And anyone who pretends it's not a terrible system full of terrible people is just completely deluded.
Yeah. And I just think they think that. They really do. They're like, we have a perfect pristine system. You're like, what are you talking about? It's crazy. It really is. But yeah, I definitely, they definitely have this. Yeah. And the truth is that it would be our government's job to break up these enormous companies so that, you know, you could work for more independent stuff. But that's how you lose unions. Like, that's how the Screen Actors Guild in LA now is like hemorrhaging healthcare members, because it's like you can't have no competition and expect the power to stay level, you know? So now, yeah, you do. You have like five places. Even over the pandemic, like all these places that at one time, you know, have been 12 channels, now they're like one company. Like the conflation of in every way of these mega businesses just becoming bigger and bigger and eating up competition. And you're subject to that in Los Angeles. And that's how you get, that's why the Writers Guild had to basically go on strike to some capacity just now, because it's like, yeah, you just, they crush people. They crush their will. They, you know, and that's completely what has happened. But again, like if Amazon was like, do you want to do a special? I'd be like, I would love to. And I'm such a Bezos fan. I mean, it's the prison we're in, you know? I mean, what the fuck are you going to do?
I had that conversation with somebody recently, because Amazon are doing specials, and they did a big run of Australian comedy specials that they asked me to do the first season of. And I did not do, but not because 15 minutes of my material was about how bad Amazon was, but because I was... like for other reasons. Like, I'd like to say it was for moral reasons. I'd like to say that I'd made some, but it was not. It was,
from now on, say it's for moral reasons. I just, it's great.
So I've acted twice.
Yes,
and I think that you'll enjoy. So I'm going to start with this. So I've acted twice. I had two lines in total. So one line in each of the things that I've acted in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the first one was a parody of a sort of comedy troupe in Australia. There was a group called The Chaser who were kind of, they came through in the era of stunts, but they did political stunts. So they were sort of like the Daily Show meets like a stunt team. And they've all gone on to have these, you know, really very well respected, you know, senior comedy careers. But they came out of a university newspaper, a bit like a Lampoon's or something like that. And they became, their most famous stunt was when, during the big summit that the American president and everybody, all the world leaders were in at Sydney, and one of them dressed up as Osama bin Laden and got through all the security in a limo. They just put the flag on the on the front of the limo and got some fake IDs, and like he dressed as Osama bin Laden and got way inside the security protected zone. It's like one of, like, to the point where the people doing the prank stopped it because they were scared they were going to get shot if they got any closer. Like,
Oh my God.
And it was an international scandal, of course, because it's meant to have this like security that was unsurpassed because you've got all the world leaders, and then some comedy prank troupe have dressed up as like the world's most famous terrorist.
And then Bin Laden gets
in because
he has an ID. Gets in. Oh my God.
So, this show was a comedy show, like a Larry Sanders style, you know, satire of of a similar style team, basically.
Okay.
Right? So I had a role on that show, one line. What?
Now, are you playing Will?
So, well, I'm going to give you the option to choose.
Okay. Oh, great.
Like,
beautiful.
You
know how to do a podcast. This is fun. You just took my dumb look, and who are you playing? You're like, no, how about this? Let's choose your own adventure. Okay.
So I did play a character on that show. So I've given you the context of what the show is.
Okay.
So I played Will. They just got me on to play myself as a real life cameo in this fictional show. You know, shows do that. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm playing me, hosting a award show type scenario. So the team is at this award sale sort of thing. It's like just in the wings of me in a tux of me hosting this awards night. So that's your option number one, right?
It's very possible. Yes.
Option number two, I play another stand-up comedian, but somebody who might be, again, vaguely based on a character like me.
A Will Anderson type.
Right. Who is actually doing something that is based on a true story that happened to me with the Chaser Boys. This is that. So regardless of which of these things is true, this is an absolutely true part of it. I once had a meeting with the Chaser Boys when they were quite new, and somebody was trying to get us to, you know, work together on a project. And we're in a room all just like, you know, just having a little, you know, chat about what we like and what we don't like. And there was this Australian Prime Minister, he never was Prime Minister, he was leader of the opposition, called Kim Beazley. And he was an overweight dude. And so people would make jokes about him being overweight, you know. And somebody had gone to one of his press conferences, and in that bit where everyone holds up microphones, they'd just been holding up like some fried chicken. Like a leg of fried chicken. Right?
See, if you're going to do it right.
So I said to them, I said, you know what I like about you guys? Your stunts always have a point. You're not like just going to a Kim Beazley press conference and holding up a leg of fried chicken. And then the room went silent and I suddenly realized, I guess that was them. So...
So in this second scenario, I'm playing
a comedian who is based on me and based on that scenario, it is a fictional version of that scenario.
Okay.
And in the third scene, I am not playing me or a fictional version of me. I am actually playing a boss at a local television station that the boys have come in to do a meeting with, and I am actually on the other side being the boss in that scenario as they try to win me over to get them to make a TV show on their network.
These are all very... You've done well.
Apologies to Josh Earl, because I think I've just started doing his show on my show.
Yeah, that's fine, though. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go with B. I think you're playing a Will Anderson type at an award show, and you're telling that's... Well, I'm going to go with C, final answer. Lock it in.
You're locking in C?
Yep.
It was A. I was just playing myself. Your immediate instincts were 100% right. If you had Malcolm Gladwell Blink style, you know, have you ever read Blink? The idea being that we evolutionary-wise, we are actually set up for our immediate instincts to often be absolutely correct, and then we do a lot of talking ourselves out of the fact that we had the immediate correct assumption. And essentially, I just did that to you. You had exactly...
I believe...
Your immediate instinct was, you just play Will? And you are absolutely fucking right. And I took 10 minutes to talk you out of that.
But it was quite a ride. Quite a ride. I loved every minute of it. Yeah. Yeah, you really did. Yeah. It's option A. You're like, no, sit down.
So, okay. So in the first one, I just played myself backstage at an award show. Can't remember what my line was. In the second one, you're going to enjoy this. So Peter Hellyer had a television show called It's a Date. And every episode was self-contained. I think maybe there was some connection between the stories, but essentially everybody just going on a date of some kind, right? So nice idea for a TV show. And some of the scenarios were fantastic. And they got a bunch of well-known Australian actors and comedians to play.
It's a scripted show where they've just scripted a date scenario for...
Yeah, so it's essentially a sitcom, but done in sort of just six parts, six different dates. The connecting theme being that they're dates. I think there may have been some connection between characters, but it wasn't really important to the overall story. You could watch them as self-contained episodes, basically. And one might be an older couple going on a date. One might be workplace romance,
Blind date. Right. Okay.
So this scenario, and they got a whole bunch of Australian actors and comedians to play parts in it. And to play fictional parts in it, to play characters in it, right? It wasn't set in the world of comedy like the other one. It was set in the real world. However, my episode was set in the world of comedy a little bit. So Asha Keddy, who is an Australian actress who's famous only in Australia, but she's kind of like if Nicole Kidman had never left Australia, she'd be Asha Keddy. She's a big Australian star. And then there's this guy called Steve Curry, who is the lead in a movie called The Castle, which is like the best Australian comedy film of all time. And Stephen Curry is a household name in Australia, really funny comedic actor. So these are the two leads. They're workmates. They work together. Get on well around the office, and they decide to go on a first date, and he invites her to watch him do stand-up comedy, right? So he's an open mic stand-up. Delicious. And for the first date, he wants to get her along to watch his act. So already quite great, but here's the best bit. He, despite the fact that he is not disabled, performs his act in a wheelchair as if he is disabled.
Oh my God.
So his bit is, all his jokes are about being in a wheelchair and what it's like to...
And people think he's in a wheelchair.
But she knows that he is not in a wheelchair. And so that is the premise for the episode, right? She goes to this comedy show to watch him and realize that he does that. So I am in this episode... I've given you a scenario. I'm not going to give you an A, B, and C this time. I've given you all the ingredients. You tell me who I play in this episode.
Well, it's an open mic. So you play another comic, maybe the MC, but another comic. And you probably say something about how he's inspirational or something. You maybe get up on stage after and twist the knife as far as how big of a ruse this is by being touched by him or something like that. I'm going to say that.
You're not far off. I'm the headliner of the show, playing myself again in my return role as me in a show. So
what range?
The show that he is playing, I am the headline act of the show that night. So he is on earlier, and we have a one-line interaction where I tell him, something that I liked about one of his jokes, because I don't know that he's still in a wheelchair.
Right.
I am also under the illusion that he's in a wheelchair, and I thought that one of his jokes was quite good. So
that's kind of what I mean. But
my favorite thing about that role was It was headlining it was shot in and headlining in the show, the room where I did my first ever open mic gig, so the literal room.
Oh, my
and
God.
And the room that I never got to headline. So the only time that I've headlined the room that I started in is in this fictional Peter Hallier show. So
in order to headline it, you had to book the role of a headliner in fiction. That's the only way that you were able to get past.
So I've acted twice, played myself twice.
Yeah, and then when you try to get up there next, yeah, they're like, no, we like Will Anderson, the actor, to pretend here, but no, we don't want to book Will.
So, yeah.
But that's great. I mean, that in a way, that has to be so... You probably don't look at it this way because you're so humble, but it has to be sort of validating in a way to be, like, asked to play yourself. That is, there is a status to that, that twice, two times, you know, that's like, you know what I mean? Like... That's never happened for me. People are like, hey, waiter, shut the fuck up. Move the dish. You're like, okay, it's actually Gareth. They're like, nobody gives a shit.
I would actually love that to be, because there's not many Australian comedians who don't act, right? Like, there's plenty of opportunities to act. Right. I've just never been interested in it. It's not what I like to do. Like, I've got plenty of other things that I like to do, and I'm not going to go and take a role away from somebody who would actually really like to do it, even if I could get something. And there's probably been some opportunities over the years that I've just, you know, said no to because, like, it's not my thing. But...
Well, you passing on Batman was shocking.
But what
still.
If, like, I just make it my mission from now on to appear in as many things as possible, but only one line and only playing myself. I have one, like, I would...
You want the Donald Trump acting career.
As himself. Like, I want to at age 75 be on, like, Graham Norton's show. Graham's getting on a bit, but he's still energetic. And I want to be sitting there with Graham Norton.
Sure, yeah.
And he's asking me about my memoir of my time in movies and TV called As Himself.
And then you played yourself again. You played yourself again the following year to a much critical acclaim. That's right, Graham. we have that line here. Good job out there, mate. Will, another amazing performance.
I mean, the great thing is, anytime I went on a show, you could show all my movies in the opening clip. Like, it's literally just, here's a little package of all the movies you've been in. The entirety of my performances could just be reshown and reshown every time I appeared on something.
Your In Memoriam is just like at the Oscars. Because I'm Will Anderson, that's why. It's just very meta.
I'm putting it out there. If you have
that
something
would be,
that is
also,
one line.
If someone wants to work, Well, if someone wants to work with you too, they're like, so Will's had a chance to read the part of Charlie. He loves it. His only thing is that he's sort of pigeonholed himself into this thing that he'll only play himself. So is there a way that the brother on the show could just be Will? Is that possible?
Yeah, it's a fictional show, but the brother happens to be Will Anderson.
But Will Anderson in this world is also a celebrity, and he's just the brother. He just is the brother. It's
we never
rewrite.
Mention why. We never explain it.
No.
And Will won't because he refuses to do more than one line. One line.
He does one line. A show, to be clear, a show. He's still going to be a prominent role. Boy, that's the dream. That's it. Will, to be your... And then you're in and out, too. Because to me, the thing about, like, acting, and it sounds so annoying to even, like, sound like you're bitching about this, but, you know, if you heard that, that's Jose's electronic feeder. But it is an annoying job because you wait around so much and, like, there's just so much waiting. Like, whenever I worked in, like, restaurants and shit, you know, I wasn't happy to be at work. But busy nights, you liked better because the time would go by. It would suck, but then it'd be, like, 10:30 before you knew it. Like, when they call you in for acting, they're like, we need you there at 6:30, and then they'll use you at, like, 7 p.m. And then you're just like, what the fuck? And you're just in, like, a little trailer all day, just like, doop, 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 you know?
I agree with you. So that's part of the reason. Even in like for the one line that I had in Peter Hallier's thing, it was like 4 hours of being there because I have to do a whole bunch of other things anyway. So I hated that aspect of it. And I'm going to put that in my contract. I'm putting it out there that I will appear in your thing as myself for one line, but we have to shoot the whole thing in half an hour. That's my other rule. I come in, and from the minute I get there, we're on a half an hour clock that we have to get this one line done or
that's
I'm out of there.
Ambitious clock. Ambitious. I'd give two hours if that's fine. Like, there were like that commercial where the dude was losing his shit and he was on the second story. That, like, I was in and out. They were just like, boom, let's go. Those ones are great. It is just, and you know what else I don't like? I don't like that people come up and touch you. Like, people come over and they're like pulling your ear and you're like, what's your name? Who are you? It's just, you are the product. It's so weird.
That's what I always think with, like, and again, why stand-up and acting feel so different to me, right? Is that, and I think part of it is ego. I don't like people telling me what to do. And yeah. I think that I understand that an essential part of the acting process is people telling you what to do and how you should talk and how you should look and, you know, they just touching you without your permission, as you said. And I don't like any of those things. And stand-up, I know you're still the product. I know the audience is still relying on you, like, kind of doing your job. But there is also that aspect of stand-up where, quite famously, you can just walk off.
Yeah.
You can just stop doing it.
Or you can just be like, get fucked. You know what I mean? You can just be like, that's it. It's one of those. And you can, you know, you can like find your way to die the death on your terms. Whereas like acting is like, it's just, but I did I did an episode of The New Girl, because, like, you know, I've been friends with Jake Johnson for a while. And when I did that show, I was like, he's got the right idea because he doesn't say his lines. He just makes them up. Like, I mean, I was on like the last season, but he's like, literally, they're just like, hey, Jake, you do need to mention the backpack. And he's like, right, okay, cool. But like everything else, he's just like making it up. And they're just like fine with it because it's like, you know, so he did find a way where I was like, see, this I would do, you know, just pure invention. And then when you've like created a plot hole, someone's like, mention the backpack, dickhead.
Yeah. You know what? I don't want to work on the first six seasons of any show. I want to come in where everybody else is just running out the clock.
Will, you want to be brought in when they're like, this show is so stale, we're literally inviting Will Anderson in as himself to say one line an episode. That's where we're at, gang. And he's here. And it's helped. They just talk about you a lot. Like, I don't know, Will's working on his new show in his room. He said he probably won't be out for the night. Hey, what do you guys feel like doing? Like, it's just like that. Like, why are we doing this? Just include him, guys. Include him. Okay? So we made the fucking deal. I would, but unfortunately, I think Will's up there coming up with new titles for his show. Let's just go to the bar. All right, we'll go to the bar. Good night, Will.
Good night.
Off camera.
How do you think that I'm actually very interested in what your perspective on this is, because, you know, the fact that this worldwide shutdown has predominantly been focused in the place that produces so much of the entertainment, right? For years, I always think that, you know, as an Australian, like, you know, America provided, you know, so much of, you know, our cultural story through its entertainment, through like Hollywood movies and television shows. And I really do wonder whether we would be so enthralled by America if it hadn't been that America just has good PR, right? You're making good stuff that shows off totally America. True. But if America hadn't had Hollywood, like, would we really be as interested in America as we are, right? So, like, I'm interested in what goes on now in the world of entertainment, because clearly, you know, there's all the world issues, but there's also the issues the entertainment industry itself is, like, you know, facing about what it's, you know, been and become and all these sort of things. What do you think happens? What happens, like, after this?
Well, I think, I mean, the truth is that, you know, stuff is shooting, stuff is ramping up, and they just have to do it with smaller crews. So they just have to do it with less people. They have to do it in, you know, kind of different. It's just more of a process. But I think that what it opens you up to is, well, first of all, that means that places are probably figuring out how to do stuff cheaper. Mm. And whenever this business figures out ways to do things cheaper, they don't go back. Like, they're not like, oh no, we do. You know what I mean? Like, so I definitely think that you're going to see like a a difference in, you know, working on shows was a very, you know, like even for all the gripes I just stated, like, you know, there's a lot of money behind it. And you can tell when you're on a set, you know, there's a lot of money. I mean, there's a lot of equipment. There's a lot of options for food. There's just, you know, all this shit. So my guess is a lot of the frills and stuff like that go. But then, yeah, I think you open yourself up to not only more creative stuff coming from places that aren't LA in America, I think also opening you up to just wider places for content entertainment. I mean, you know, people really just consume things so differently. I don't know what it's like over there, but over here now, they've basically, like, in order to compete with Netflix and Hulu, places like, you know, say Warner Brothers or NBC are not allowing Netflix to have Friends any longer. They're like, we're taking Friends back, and we're now starting
The television program Friends. They can't actually just say you're not allowed to have Friends anymore.
No. And in my business, they have that power. Yeah, we're taking your Friends back. What? That's amazing. Yeah, that reminds me, I think, of the most, like, Abbott and Costello bit you and I ever had at a dollop show was when I said, I'm rooting penguins in this one, and you just put your arm out and said, I'd think about that, mate. Because I was like, right, I knew what rooting meant, but I just was saying it like, right, I'm an idiot. So there will be more of that, and then, you know, you just, with Netflix now even, or places you, or YouTube, I mean, you can just watch so much different shit that I think, you know, like a lot of businesses in this country, because of COVID, because of what it's done to work and how terribly we've handled that, I think it just opens you up to a lot of stuff being made cheaper other places, but arguably as good or better. And at the end of the day, it's like, you know, they shouldn't have a monopoly on entertainment. I mean, I remember when I first moved to LA, like, the monopoly was insane. I mean, you had to go through the proper channels. It changed very quickly when I moved here. But when I first moved there, like, you had to go, you know, perform, get an agent, get some auditions, get experience, it was this like gradual climb, you know, and same with Scientology when I went through it. But so it's like you kind of had to respect that protocol, like it or not. And now it's just like, yeah, now, I mean, it's so much different. I mean, you know, the way you make more, people make more money making fucking Instagram videos than, you know, people on TV. And the way that they changed all these little pods, so all these little networks now, is just created, you know, I think just too many weird options and not enough good stuff. So everywhere wants you to pay $7.99 a month. And it's just like, get fucked, you know? It's not, you don't have, no, you know?
Well,
you can watch YouTube.
What have you been watching? Because, like, these times lead to, you know, deep dives into the entertainment world. I'm always interested in what you've been watching and fascinated by. Have you found something?
I've been watching the thing that I think the last time we did the show, I mentioned I've been watching What We Do in the Shadows, and that show I'm caught up with and is fantastic.
It is. I'm going to say this again, because I just think it bears fucking repeating, and I'm such an advocate for this show. Is like, I've watched, I would say, the American TV adaption of What We Do in the Shadows. In the last 2 months, I've got to watch each episode 4 times. Wellington Paranormal, which you might not have seen yet, but that's the New Zealand spin-off, you know, out of the original movie as well. So there's a little universe, like, and they all actually fit together, because I've watched Wellington Paranormal, I've watched the original movie, and I've watched, like, the American TV series. So many, it's my comfort place during this crisis. It is one of the rare shows that gets funnier and funnier the more you watch it as well. Like, you know, it really... When I say I've watched it 4 times, I'm looking forward to the next 4 times I will watch it as well, because there's just stuff in it that gets funnier every time you watch it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I don't know why it is so fucking funny, because it's, you know, I don't know. It must just be, it's just very well acted, very well written, and it's just funny as shit. But there's not enough stuff like that. And then I've been watching, like, you know, I started watching a documentary series. What the fuck is it called? The Power of Nightmares. Oh. That a buddy of mine recommended to me. And I've been watching that documentary series lately. And that's just basically about how it's hard to not be a little obsessed with how we got to where we are in this country. And it's just a great 10-part series on like how we create enemies in order to do whatever the fuck we want. America. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's good stuff to know when you're like, you know, doing a ollie into fascism. So yeah, but that's a fun answer, isn't it? Oh, and I will, can I tell you the other thing? This is the worst thing, but just to show the color spectrum here. I also watch this show called Below Deck. Every Monday I watch Below Deck, which is about, it's a Bravo show.
So Below Deck. I know that Amy watches this because...
Good. She's a, I knew I liked
well,
her.
Well, I know this because... Oh, she said to say hello, by the way. Anyway, I can do that in the middle of the podcast.
Send her my best.
She also did
yes.
say to send her love. So
yes, send my love.
She's been watching it because when I look at the Netflix, I can see that episodes have been watched, but I've never watched it and I'm not familiar with what Below Deck is. But she's clearly decided to go solo on this project. So what is this? Take me into the world. Take me, Gareth. I am currently on the deck and I need to go below the deck. So take me below the deck.
Below the deck. Below the deck of Below Deck. I don't know. You know when you're on the road, like, and you just have those days? Like, I think it's obviously, it's different in the States because you do the weekend. So you have your Friday or your Saturday where it's just, there's fuck all to do. You know, you're in, like, the middle of nowhere. You've gotten your Subway sandwich. And you're just flipping through. I just landed on Below Deck one day. And I don't know why I love it, but basically what Below Deck is... And it's really a it's not an escape because you're stressed out. You're like watching it stressed out. But okay, so basically the premise of the show is there are these luxury yachts. There are these luxury yachts where millionaires go and they'll drop, you know, $300,000 on 4 days to go on this luxury yacht, and you know, they're in the middle of the Caribbean or they're in the middle of the Atlantic or whatever. They're like a Corsa, whatever it is. And
they're
so
out there doing important work, like trying to work out how, you know, the world could have enough money for everybody to eat properly and be housed, right? I assume that's what the show's
yes,
about.
Yes, yes. And how to get more, how to suck more oil out of Earth until it just becomes a dried, unwalkable husk. But good stuff like that, like stuff that matters, you know, stuff where they're like, how many babies are going to be fully ruined because of this? I still say we plow ahead. So these relatable, cool millionaires go on these luxury
yachts. To discuss climate change with Greta Thunberg.
On these solar powered luxury yachts. To go and pick up plastics from the ocean. No, I'm kidding. Throw them in there. And so the show is from the perspective of the crew. So you've got a captain, you've got your stew crew, and then you've got your like deckhands. And it's just, and the situation, if you work on one of these, is fucking crazy because what you do is you share these tiny ass rooms. With another person, and you just basically work for like 2.5 months, and you make pretty good money like for 2.5 months, and then you get to take some time off. And so basically it's about them having to...
Okay, before we get to... I just want to break this down a little. So tell me about... Paint me a picture of what is on one of these yachts that these people need to be in such a small space.
So, okay, they're huge. Some of these are huge. And so you'll have, you know, like there will be a weight room. There will be like a master bedroom that's amazing with its own bathroom. Then there'll be like three guest rooms that are amazing. There's a hot tub. There's the dining area. There's the inside area. There's the inside dining room. Then there's the galley. That's where the food gets made. So just so you know, this is going to be helpful if you ever get into a conversation about boats, because I have since watching Below Deck somehow stumbled into a conversation, and I said galley. Like, so you have a new term, galley. That's where the food comes from, galley. Not Galith, to be clear.
But also, I just love that idea that somehow you can't call it a kitchen because you're fucking on the water.
Bill, like, Will, it's Will, such an arbitrary choice. Nobody's going to know what the fuck you're talking about if you call it a kitchen.
What an arbitrary
choice. You're in international waters. Like,
everyone around the world basically calls it a fucking kitchen, and you've just gone, but when you're on water, it's a galley, my friend.
Sorry, there's no kitchens allowed out here. Maritime law forbids it.
I'm going over to the left-hand side of this boat. Oh, no, you won't, sir.
I'll tell you what, you'll be peeling potatoes in the galley if you keep using that lingo. That's where you'll go. That's where you go for your punishment.
What pretentious. Yeah. Like, there's no reason for them to have changed such simple words. Like, it's not like they've created a whole new language, right? They've just decided.
It's not a Klingon planet. No. Inchura la galley. Yeah, there's no need. It's pointless. Well, I don't know why. That's what happens, though. But that's what I always think about that when it's like our country. Like, I'm like, why is our country the only one that has just shirt, like the metric system? Why is that? Like, we're the only, we just were like, nah, fuck it. It's just like, but it's been established. We're like, nah, it's different here. That's a mile. It's like, oh, God damn it. What about cars? But now they got to say both.
But also, like, a dollar is metric. Like, it's not like the metric system is not being used in the country. So it's just like a hodgepodge of different ones.
Dick deep in the metric system, but still is just like, yeah, no, we went rogue. Anyone want some olives from the galley?
So,
what do you want from the galley?
So firstly, we can already see like that all they needed to do was put the hot tub in the waits room and all the people who work on the boat could actually have adequate space to be living. But it is a classic example of, you know, our society where the rich people have way more than they could possibly need, and for them to have way more than they can possibly need, that the people who don't have enough have to be squeezed into completely inappropriate, you know, an environment.
Yes, and if they fall out of line and don't do properly, they're off the boat. Yep. It is America the boat, essentially is what it is.
We've got this show. It's called America the Boat. Could you call it Below
America,
Deck?
It really is. And so it's, yes, and it really is. So it's the 1% throwing breadcrumbs for the 99. That's what the show is. But so then you have the interpersonal drama. I mean, it really is, it is not, you would not watch this and go, oh, I see why he watches this. You would watch this and go, this is exactly what I thought. Why does he watch this? But there's something, the stress that they put themselves through. And then and this is like every show. I mean, when you think about Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, which we've talked about, you know, 140 times, that show never goes off formula. It's very simple. Ramsay's going to show up to your place. Your food's going to suck. He's going to tell you. You're not going to believe it. He's going to try to implement changes. You're going to push back. He's going to fix your family. He's going to make your menu better. And then he's going to replace your chef. And then you're going to have a good restaurant 50% of the time. And Below Deck is the same. Every time, it's these people come on this boat. They want to be serviced. The people are trying to do it. The chef fucks up one thing. They think it's going to go badly. It goes okay. Then they can't. Then there's like a storm or something. They have to make do. They come up with like poker night, and the people are very happy. And then when they leave, they give them a pretty good tip. Then they all go out and get shit-faced, and a bunch of them make out, and they shouldn't have. And then someone's like, you're an asshole, and like breaks a window. And then it's like, on the next Below Deck. And then like any other show, it's not like the next week I come back and I go, all right, we're picking up where we left off. It's such junk food that I'm like, I literally don't remember a fucking thing that happened on the last one. And that's why they do the recap. That's where they're like, hey, Stoner, remember last week? You're like, nope, why am I here? They're like, cuz Sandy was about to fire Hannah. You're like, oh shit, that's right, Hannah brought drugs on the boat. What, my week? What did I do this week?
I've been watching a new Gordon Ramsay show, actually. He's got...
I'm sure I've watched it.
Have you watched it? It's the one where he does international adventures. I don't know what it's
called. Yep. He must hate his family, right? That's what's happening? I mean, he follows us both on Twitter, but he must... And we love the man, but good Lord, he must just be like, yes, all right, I'm off to Indonesia for the year. Bye, everybody.
So my favorite thing about this show, and I hope that you've been enjoying this too. So for people who don't know, it's kind of like an Anthony Bourdain style show. So Gordon Ramsay going to, you know, different cultures and different environments and being immersed in the environment. But because it's Gordon Ramsay, you know, it has to have this like action adventure element to it where he's like an Indiana Jones. And so every time that he's going to these places, he's always like, they're telling him that he has to jump out of a helicopter and stuff. Like there's all these unnecessary action bits to this show.
If you want to get the right egg, we need to go in the cave. He's like, bloody hell, the cave? It's like, Gordon, your producers knew about this 2.5 months ago. Yeah. Yeah, and
it's a cameraman already in the cave.
Yeah, cameraman, we've been in the cave. We got in the cave yesterday. You emailed back saying, can't wait to get in the cave. It doesn't matter. Yes, and it's also great because what I loved about Anthony Bourdain's show was that it was totally, it just organically happened. They put him, this show, he'll be like, what do you mean? And she'll be like, because at the end of the week, I think you should cook for the president. And he's like, cook for the president? I've got to cook this culture. I'm just learning this week for the president. Oh boy, I've got my work cut out for me. Like they add those stakes to it, which I find very funny. And then it's like at the end of like an interaction, someone will be like, well, if you need tomatoes, you should go see my man. He's got the best tomatoes, but he lives on that haunted mountain up there. He's like, haunted mountain? Good Lord, who could have seen this coming? Like, you replied to the, shh.
So my favorite thing about it is it's got a real online gameplay element to it where to complete this meal, so they set up the stakes of what the meal will be at the start. Like, he's going to cook for the Zulu King or whatever. And, you know, and you have this image in that moment, of course, because, and again, this is Hollywood and this is like probably, you know, an example of us not having like kind of racist connotations to these things. But when you go, he's going to cook for a Zulu King, and you, in your head, you imagine some like dude with skulls around his neck who's going to kill Gordon Ramsay. And then like at the end, a guy who looks like an accountant rocks up and you're like, oh yeah, they're like modern day business people. He dresses in a suit if he's going to lunch. Yeah. I get it. He's like the local mayor.
Yeah. But I mean, he also like, at the end of an interview, like someone will be like, you know, you've got to go see my friend. Like, and it leads, every interaction leads to the next interaction in a way where you're like, come on. But it.
Well, in a way that he should not be surprised, because these people have done a remarkable job of like getting each of the key ingredients for his thing and then just like knowing only one other person in a convenient location to go and get it from. Like, my favorite is though, and it's definitely one of these things. So if we're going to cook seafood, then we're going to have to catch some fresh fish. And then they go out fishing, and Gordon Ramsay is the world's worst fisherman. Now, he's been in two or three episodes, he's fished.
Yes.
And he never catches anything.
But can we
stop filming him trying to fish?
Can we also talk about the wetsuit situation or the dry suit situation? Like, he looks like he's vacuum sealed. Like, he seriously looks like jerky. Like, his suit, it's just, I've been in wetsuits and they're not flattering, but his, I'm like, what the hell? He just looks very different in a wetsuit than you would imagine. Like, he doesn't look very aquatic. And then, when he gets in, he's like trying to spear these fish and he's just like missing everything.
The worst. Terrible. He's like the worst at it.
And then there's also ones where he goes on a hunt and he's like got to shoot like a deer and he can't, and he misses, you know, but he's a chef.
My favorite thing about it is so often they're MacGuffins as well. Like, he has to go out and like hunt these crocodile or whatever because all the native people eat crocodile, and then he just ends up doing something with lamb. He does a take on crocodile, but with lamb.
Yeah. That's so true, yeah. This is my lamb crocodile.
Yeah.
Zulu King, who looks like you did your taxes. Thank you. Yeah. Have you seen... Okay, and I mean, there's not anything else left to say about Below Deck, so we're not leaving the subject. Have you seen the one where... This is to see how hooked on Ramsay are you. Have you seen the one where he cooks with his family at home?
Oh, no, I don't think I have.
Yeah, okay. This is the test to see how in this are you. If you'll simply... neither of us eat meat. So you are simply learning how to make roasts from him and his daughter for reasons I know not. Like, I'm not sitting there like, I'm going to make that this Christmas. I'm like, I don't eat it. But I've watched, it's like him and, you know, he's like, my son Jack, who absolutely adores shrimp, you know? And then he's like, all right, Jack, we're going to make a jambalaya today, all right? You know, and he just makes it with his kids. It's pretty sad, and I've seen all of them.
I saw a road movie style one that he was in just recently, where it was him and two other chefs, and like from, you know, different famous chefs from different countries. And they went like on a
super chef.
They went on like a road movie style adventure together to like, you know, get all the ingredients. Again, it was one of those, we've got to go on a mission to collect all the ingredients.
Seems like a lot of the shows are about Indiana Jonesing some paprika.
A bunch of shows that should be called We've Not Heard of Shops. Because like
Gordon Ramsay's no shops.
You can get all this stuff down at the local supermarket, but apparently I've got to drive 200 kilometers to make
Gordon
mozzarella.
Gordon would rather spelunk to make the omelet.
But yeah, it was three different chefs so it was Ramsay and two other fellas trying to.
Who are the other?
Oh.
Are you like me where you feel like I feel like I've already been kind of married to Gordon, yeah. Like I'm not seeing other chefs. Like I'm like, you know,
well,
like I won't. I he's the gold standard. To
we
me.
Were
that
we were a
Bourdain about him.
Household, so that was our number one. Rest in peace.
Yes,
still.
But I think to me, the Anthony's show. Well, yes, he is a chef. It's more of like a travel, like as far as like the celebrity chef culture.
Yeah, but I'll run you through my big three.
Okay.
I've got a big three. So. Bourdain, I will say for a couple of reasons. I read his book and I absolutely loved his book, kind of before I knew even, you know, before the TV stuff. I just really loved his book. So I was in and he was beloved in this household and Amy still, you know, gets really sad when we can't even watch old episodes still yet at the moment because it's too sad.
Really? I'll tell you, at the end of this, I'll tell you my Anthony Bourdain.
And we would, when we were in traveling, if we landed in a place where we didn't know what to do, so often what we'd do is look up if Anthony Bourdain had been there and then just look up what he'd done and go and do the things that he'd done.
And he probably had been there, right? I mean,
I don't think we went to many places that he hadn't been, put it that way. So
yeah, he went everywhere.
And he always did things that were really understanding of what the culture was. So you got like a very different experience than the tourist guys. So Anthony Bourdain, Gordon Ramsay, of course, like, but...
Yep.
Like a complicated relationship with Gordon because sometimes like you watch these shows just shaking your head at how ridiculous it all is. But there's a love there as well. And like his restaurants, I've eaten in a bunch of them, makes tasty food. Like, and then third, Tom Colicchio. So Tom Colicchio, Top Chef was where when I was in LA, the best meals I ever had were at his restaurant. I like his sense of humor. I think he's like, I like his politics. He's kind of like, you know, he's one of those guys that, so they're my big three. They fill different roles, but they're my big three chefs.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. That's a good list. That's solid. What I loved about, I didn't actually start watching Anthony Bourdain's shows until kind of right before he, maybe like a year before he died. But I actually had a show on the Travel Channel that they completely fucked up because they're the worst network to ever work with. But Evan and I made a travel show called Mancations.
I mean, brave time to be dissing the Travel Channel. I mean, these are very brave words now that no one can travel. You're like, you know, I'm going to burn the fucking Travel Channel.
Yeah, and the Aviation Network. Suck it. That's right. I'm coming at you. Yeah. Yeah. They can suck. And so truly like the dumbest experience. So we ended up shooting like a season of the show, but this is when we'd made a pilot of the show and we were in New York, like just shooting a bunch of like content and taking pictures and stuff, but we still weren't sure if we were going to get picked up or what the deal was. But they were bringing in everybody to sort of shoot their promos, you know, whatever, like, you know, the stuff where you're like, hey, it's me, you're watching the Travel Channel, you know, like I was never going to give a shit. I'm no Will Anderson, otherwise that would have clout. I don't play myself. And I didn't even think about it, but like Anthony Bourdain obviously had the biggest show on the Travel Channel. He kind of put the Travel Channel on the map. And then he's there. And so he's there for the press and he walks in, you know, like a little bit later, but he's still there. And they have a holding area for all of us. They have us and then a couple other shows they're picking up and then like the Man versus Food guy or whatever. But like Anthony Bourdain is just like the coolest dude. And at this point, I don't really fucking know him. I just know like he's got the best show. So, but I'm probably in my head a little like, this guy's not that good. Like, I've got a better show than this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like that dickhead. And he just is so funny. And being like, so what is your show? What are you going to do on your show? You know, what I would, you know, he's like, the thing that has made my show good. He just talked about the crew, how great the crew was, how he, keeping his crew, and never listening to the fucking Travel Channel has been his formula for success. And which ended up obviously being advice that we could not take because, you know, we had to listen to him, but it would have been the right advice to take. And then we're eating lunch. And then he's like, can we have beer? And all these Travel Channel people are like, Anthony, that's so funny. He's like, I'm serious. Can we just get some beer? And then he gives like a PA, like $60. And he's like, go get 2 12-packs of Heineken. And then they're all like, of course, we're not going to be stuffy suits, whatever Anthony wants. And then they bring back all this beer. And then for the rest of the day, we were all just drinking beer. And I was like, this dude fucking gets it. And then he left. He came last and left first, but as he should. But those 3-4 hours were like, as someone who was totally, arguably was like, fuck this guy. I was like, that dude is the man. Like, just the best. And then having fallen in love with the show after that, you are like, that is why that show works. That dude is 100% how he is on that show is how he is. And that's why it works. There's nothing set up. There's, you know, if something doesn't work, he admits. I mean, talk about having trouble fishing. Like every fishing segment he does, he's like, we can't get these. We should stop doing these. You know, like it just, and yeah, it was crazy. So I think when like, because I do think that like when Amy says like, she still can't watch, like he had such a cultural impact. And I always think whenever I hear it, like I do try to mention it just because I'm like, there's so few genuine articles and that dude had nothing, had no reason to be gracious, had no reason to get beer, didn't even have to fucking be there really or be around us and was the whole time and was just, you know, made it good.
I'm going to incorporate that into my new thing because it felt a little selfish, the fact that I'm demanding that I only play myself and I only have one line. So
okay,
instead of half an hour, I'm going to give you an hour. But half an hour of that is going to be charming other people. So I'll come in for an hour.
I'll do my thing in half an hour.
And then the other half an hour, I'll be like the guy buying some beer, celebrating everybody, thanking them for having me on for my one line. And then I'll piss off. Leave a good impression.
That is how you act. That's the right acting. Acting, that's how you do it. You give them an hour. I'm telling you, you give them 90 minutes. You're going to go far in this business, kid.
You know what? Back up again. I'll give him 90 minutes, but again, an hour. An hour of it is now charming.
Yes, but that's all we're going to need. Because again, your Will, you have one line. It's just we might be a little behind schedule, but schedule, which by the way might be a new, just saying. Just think about it. But I think that's all we need. So yeah, once the new girl starts back up, I actually know the coach from Hoops. I do a podcast with him, so I could put in a good word if that goes for more. I can see what he says.
Thank you for doing this. It was fun.
Thank you, Will. It is always a pleasure, truly. Yeah, I've got one thing I want to mention. Yeah. My plug. I have a good plug.
Good plug.
You can please go to, I do these shows on Instagram Live Thursday night that are all improvised stand-up comedy. They are suggestion-based, so people can send an email, a suggestion, and then I'll riff on them on Instagram Live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. L.A. You can send an email to garethslive@gmail.com. And then if you want to watch some of them, go to YouTube, and it's Gareth Reynolds TV, and subscribe to that, and then watch some of these Gareth's clips. Gareth's. It's great. Fantastic. That's it. That's all I got. Oh, and September 24th, Dave and I are doing a live dollop. And you can go find us for ticks. And then October 24th, I'm doing a live stand-up show, Into the Void. And you can go to my social media and find that, at Reynolds Gareth. Now I'll shut up, because I was just one of those people that I despise.
No, I don't despise that at all. You gave me your time. You should get your plugs in. And plus, they're all for things that people would enjoy. So I don't actually think that they're... like. That's what my attitude to plugs is really... all you're trying to do is tell someone about something that they actually might want to watch or enjoy.
I always feel douchey, though. It's so, I don't know.
But why?
I think because I watched so much TV growing up, I watched how people would push the thing they were on a talk show for. Like, that raised me in many ways. Like, you know, whatever. And I would always... be like, I always liked the person who wasn't pushy. And so when I'm pushy, I'm like, oh, you're being like Mike Myers. You're annoying. You're being like Mike Myers on Letterman that one time. Like, that's just where my mind goes. Because I remember seeing Mike Myers do his press tour for Austin Powers, and he was rocking the same material. And I was like, does this dude not know what a fucking TV junkie is? Like, we sniff it, Mike. You're full of shit. Good Lord. How many times are you going to say you tried coffee at this local place called Starbucks? Enough.
Don't you know the ongoing effects of this, that I won't be able to promote my own material as an entertainer myself because I'm so scarred by this experience.
Yeah. See? Welcome to hell.
I wanted to ask about the stand-up show. I'm going to let you go in a second. But I wanted to ask about the stand-up show that... So you're doing it literally, as like this title suggests, like Into the Void. Like, it's a stand-up show of you just being in a room by yourself doing stand-up?
I believe that it is just... I believe that I don't hear people. I've done some shows where you hear people. I think this one is... maybe I'm wrong. I think this one, though, is just, into the camera. Which would sound a lot stranger to me if I hadn't been doing these fucking weekly shows where that's all I'm doing, you know. But it still will be weird for sure. It's so hard to tell, obviously, how you're doing, which is one of the great things about live. How am I doing? Because as you know, you can have a show that you think is dog shit and people be like, that was amazing. And you can have a show that you think was amazing and listen back and be like, that was not that good. Like, the audience is very important into your barometer for how this is going and where you're going with it and how to add new stuff. So, yeah, when you are just like, you know, I listened to my last set I did in Australia when I was there when you guys had the fires, which I just go where there are fires. That's my tour schedule. And I was listening to that, and it was the last show I did at the Comedy Store. And I was like, I should not be torturing myself by listening to this. Because I was going to do some, because I'm like getting ready to do stuff. So I was like listening. And I was like, listen to how enjoyable this sounds to do. This just sounds, and it just sounds so goddamn, like crowd work, you know, picking on someone. All these little things that are just so minute. And I would be, you know, and we'd show up and be like, oh, I'm tired. Oh, I'm going to do this show and go to bed. It's like, man, I will suck that show's dick right now to have it back.
Yeah, well, that's what I feel. So I didn't do a heap of stand-up last year, but I feel really lucky that I got, you know, 2-3 months at the start of this year where I was doing a lot of shows and I was doing really different shows. And so I got to do like my crowd work shows. I got to do like a written show. I got to do some different venues and festivals and stuff. So I was in that perfect time where I was just loving it. Like, in some ways you could look at that as being really disappointing because then suddenly it goes away. But I hadn't got to the point where I was back resenting any of that. And so now the idea that I'm not going to do it for, you know, it's probably going to be 18 months, 2 years before I get to, you know, experience those parts of it again in the same way as they were before, you know, all this happened. It is, it's a very it's fucking weird, crazy feeling.
Well, I mean, I think for me it's been very, but it, especially for, I mean, we were doing a lot of live dubs, but I mean, you are a grinder. Like, you are out there, like, constantly grinding. So it is the shift in, like, from the grinding to nothing.
Nothing.
It's really, it's and crazy that
nothing
it
now
feels
and foreseeably nothing for a very long time.
Yeah. And having to, and yeah, and I think having a realistic look, like you're saying, like that to me sounds like the right time frame. Like we have some stuff we've rescheduled that we're like, maybe, but like we're not ambitious with like thinking this shit is going to happen, you know, this fall or anything, but.
Well, I think that like there'll be various different versions of things, no doubt. Like things aren't just going to, like they'll come up with ways of doing, and they're already doing smaller versions of socially distanced shows and these sort of things. Yeah. And I think that'll eventually have to become bigger versions of those things. But for it to be back to what it was beforehand, you know, what we remember it being, where you can actually just, you know, be jammed in a room
not
together.
Not think about stuff.
And it's not going to, because even if you go to a show, there's still the awareness that, you know, that you're taking some sort of risk, right? And so... Yeah. Even that idea of the funnier you are on stage, the more fluids people expel from their mouths. So literally, like, even in that moment where you always felt at your, you know, your best, which is just when, like, you're not giving them time to finish laughing at the last thing before they have to start laughing at the next thing. Like, that uncontrollable laughter, that is actually the most dangerous you could possibly be to them and their health and their safety.
Yeah, when you get someone, like, in the front who just has losing their shit too much.
Yeah, and you're just like...
That person, you're like, get him out of here. Yeah. Get him out of here.
We're just going to have to back off a bit, guys. We've gone into the funny red zone and we just need to... Look, guys,
that's the scene I want to write that I want you to do. I'm going to be your agent telling you why you can't do certain jokes because it's too good. Will, I love it, but
it's just,
I mean,
come on,
that's a killer. That's a germ. That's a germ volcano.
It's a super spreader. We've gone through your set and we've identified 8 super spreaders that you just can't do during the show.
We're aiming for a C show is a safe show. That's what we're saying. Okay? So that if we could aim there, that's the target. That's how you get the longevity during a pandemic. And you'll do your great stuff later, you know? But now if you feel like something's getting momentum, take it out of the act.
Yeah, we are a C show venue. We guarantee our audience a C show. We're actually at sea. That's why we've had to change the kitchen to the galley. You might have noticed that.
Right. So this is the galley. And anybody who's got any other questions, that's why you're the best in the biz, Anderson.
all right, mate. Thank you for doing this.
All right, buddy. My pleasure, as always.